Welcome to Matinee Mondays on the Remnants of Reese's Remember All. Today being not Monday, as I stated on the Facebook page, I had to scrap the entire episode, rewrite the script, and do it all over again. So this is a bit more on track for what I wanted to talk about. Some may be remembering that I wanted to discuss The Matrix back in 2019 for the 20th anniversary for it, but that didn't pan out because I was struggling with the script then, as I have been for the past couple of years. But I have sorted it out, and I figured that now that the fourth movie is getting ready to come out, now would be a good time, a real good time, to discuss it. So over the next few weeks, it's going to be all about reading the code and plugging into the franchise that is The Matrix, the first installment of this fantasy sci-fi action series. And let's be real here, it's actually a cyberpunk series more than anything else. It clocks in with an R rating, a 2 hour and 16 minute runtime, and written and directed by the Wachowski sisters, and scored by Don Davis. Casting was phenomenal for this, and I honestly couldn't see Will Smith in the role of Neo. Not at all. Nope. And even though Keanu wasn't the first choice, he did an amazing job and was incredibly dedicated to the role, like 110%. So if you don't know what's going on behind the scenes and what happened and what they all went through to make this movie happen, it's been over 20 years. It's kind of like Lord of the Rings lore at this point of just, oh, hey, in this scene, this is going on in the background. Oh, the actors did this. So it's out there, but you got to know what you're looking for. And I encourage you to go and do the looking for that. And if you're not aware of the cast, or you want a refresher on the cast, is Lawrence Fishburne as Morpheus, Carrie Ann Moss as Trinity, Hugo Weaving as Agent Smith, Gloria Foster as the Oracle, Joe Pantoliano as Cypher, Marcus Chong as Tank, Julian Arahanga as Pak, Matt Doran as Mouse, Belinda McClory as Switch, Anthony Ray Parker as Dozer, Paul Goddard as Agent Brown, Robert Taylor as Agent Jones, and David Astin as Reinhardt. There's a lot that has been covered for this particular series, like the philosophy, the iconic nature of bullet time, and the themes of the movie that have been reused over and over and over in the industry, all of which still hold up today and oftentimes seem more relevant than they were then in terms of themes and the breaking of the oppressive forces that weigh us all down. This has lent to the idea that this is, in fact, actually a trans-narrative above all else, and there's been a lot of discourse on the subject, even after it was confirmed by Lily Wachowski, to in fact be a trans allegory. There are those who state that it is not, even among the trans community, and this is debated. So I thought I would take the time to look at the film through the lens of someone who came out recently and see if it holds up, along with the other themes and philosophies that make up the series on a film-by-film basis. So we're just going to go through this, see if it makes sense to actually be a trans film or a queer film in general. The reason being is that queer creators, before realizing our queer nature, will not recognize that our work itself is queer in nature. That we are, through our process of making content, working out who we are, and that the work can help us come to those important realizations during the process, or once completed, or just as a stepping stone on the path of self-discovery. So as they say, let's crack this egg. One of the first things that I noticed was the song Dissolved Girl by Massive Attack playing, and it could be about the trans life experience or getting lost in the corporate shuffle of everyday life. And it's something that I noticed going through this, was that there was a lot of overlap of corporate capitalist America holding you down and being part of a minority group and being held down by the establishment. So the two kind of go together. There's overlap here in the way that it is presented. The start of the film. To start it all off, Neo's trapped in his routine looking for what's wrong with the world, seeking answers to questions that he really isn't even sure make sense. Feeling isolated, he turns to the internet, where a group of people find him, and so do agents of the establishment. Rather than coaxing him back into line with the quote, natural order of things, these agents push him into the arms of the so-called fringe or radical group. This can be something to fit many lived experiences of people. It is vague enough that viewers can align with this life that Neo is living through how the world is, that looking for yourself and your community of people. Okay, so that car scene, it brings up the idea of being bugged and observed by prying eyes, being found out. It is that concern that many in the LGBT plus community face regularly. Some are not out at all. Some are only out to certain people and in certain places. That kind of tracks so far. I mean, we worry that if we are outed, that we will either have to denounce the truth of who we are to maintain a safe living space, which many, even in the United States, must do to ensure their own safety, or suffer the consequences, from being disowned and thrown out, to passive-aggressively being attacked on the regular for who we are, to threats against our lives. So, for many, it's a matter of personal safety. There are places and spaces that are safe enough for us to be out and open about who we are. That's something that Trinity is offering Neo. This can also align with the idea of throwing off the bindings of strict capitalistic ideals that have been damaging the population. I mean, either way, this is not a right-wing piece of media right from the get-go. So the co-opting of it as a, oh, I've been red-pilled, red for Republicans and the right, no. It's really not. And to make it such is a stretch. To further this, Neo's discussion with Morpheus is that quintessential aha moment that we tend to go through, knowing that there is something not quite right, either with us or with the world. That discussion is the moment of coming to terms with who we are and accepting ourselves. We can either take the blue pill and deny ourselves, or take the red pill and face who we are. To face who we are and live in the open truth of that knowledge, of who we are. Because it is not just your truth, my truth, it is the truth. Your truth, my truth isn't really a thing. It's a philosophical, logical fallacy that has been clung to, and it is fading. So here's to you, philosophy professors who were saying, oh, it'll fade over time. It's fading. It's still clung to, but it's more about letting it go. Back on track. The prison of the mind is also in reference to gender and identity of self, the bindings of society that strictly mashes people into tiny little boxes to make us more acceptable to the structures that be, rather than change with a better understanding of who we as people are. The cipher is direct with Neo about Kansas going bye-bye. Reference to queer media, much like the reference to Alice in Wonderland, this building on those ideas has led many to see this series through a queer lens. All of these references mixed with what is happening with Neo, having what could be described as a panic attack from quote-unquote waking up and realizing who he is. The realization can be quite jarring, especially to those who have lived in places where being queer is not acceptable, and to be trans is the worst part of the community. So, for those of you who don't know what I just covered with the Kansas Going Bye-Bye and Alice in Wonderland, both of those have been seen as very heavily queer pieces of media. They have been co-opted by the LGBT community because, for whatever reason, I couldn't even begin to tell you personally, a lot of us just tend to have an attachment to both, you know, the story of Alice in Wonderland and The Wizard of Oz. So, the two being heavily queer pieces of media that have been picked up by the queer community is something that definitely has, I think, contributed, wouldn't be the best word, to the film. Maybe not intentionally. You know, like I said earlier, it's just one of those things that's, we don't realize that we're putting forth queer content and that we are in small ways outing ourselves, not necessarily to others, but just trying to out ourselves to ourselves, like not wanting to deal with it, not being in a place that we can deal with it. Part of who we are is always going to try and assert itself and live in the truth of who we are. Not just our truth, but the truth. Because we may not see it, but sometimes the people around us and the people closest to us actually do see it. Again, back on track. I do see a similarity between the shape of the human pods and the meme of, quote, cracking the egg that is part of the trans and non-binary communities. It's not something that I understood until I really did some self-examination and realized, oh, hey, I guess I am non-binary. It's all these little comments I've been making, and now that I'm actually taking the time to slow down and think about it, wow. It's just that coming out of the shell and being who you really are. And then we see Neo just get tossed aside. And that being tossed aside when you crack the egg, that fear and concern is strong for so many, and it does happen. It happens a lot. In the process of rebuilding Neo's muscles, Morpheus says that Neo has never used his eyes before. I think that this relates to seeing things in a new light and in a new context. Once you start the journey of accepting that you are queer, trans, non-binary, what have you, having to rebuild who you are and go through training and learning about yourself, the community or population that you're part of, is a process, and it can be long and painful, but worth it in the end. There's a reason it's called growing pains. It very well may be indicating the process of transitioning, living in the body that you are meant to have, and the process of seeing yourself and how you relate to the world in a new light. To further that, when Morpheus takes Neo through the history of the real world, it's much like the journey that the community goes on to learn community history. It's either been forgotten or erased by the establishment. The moment of humans being grown and not born is reflective of the attack on women's rights over bodily autonomy and the attempts to see women as incubators and children as property that's been going on for decades now. And in attempts to dismantle that and get rid of that, the fight is only heating up more and more.
Looking at you, Texas.
Now, Tank. This is where the idea that each member of the crew of the Nebuchadnezzar can, they can be a stand-in for different aspects of the community. I'll touch a little bit more on this at the end, but I just want to, like, slip this in here now, that I'm not going to be going into, oh, Trinity's this, Neo represents that in the community. I can do that. I can do, like, a total breakdown of who represents what part of the community among the crew, but meh, not at the moment. So, to deviate back onto track, Tank is the one who strikes me as the fun teacher and friend in the community who's either a really fierce ally or has been out his whole life. And that's what I think Zion could probably be like. Those who've been out their whole lives or are really fierce allies and the kinds of people that we need in the fight for equality. Learning new skills through the process of the uploading shows that we are more than just our queerness and can do anything that we set our minds to, and that is our power. That is our true strength, even if there are those who will try to boil down our entire existence to that one tiny little aspect of who we are as people, to that one small bit of our humanity. This brings the whole crew around Neo in support, showing their support to the newest member of the community. Well, all except for Cypher, who I think is representative of the population who retransitions or detransitions, depending on the terminology that you prefer, because his experience is not healthy, affirming, or supported. His living out in the open has not been nearly as fulfilling as he was hoping that it would be, that there is part of him that is not able to accept that living honestly, it comes with a cost of being rejected by society, living in harsher conditions that those of the cishet population do not have to instinctively or inherently have to be worried about living in. Cypher is the one who expected things to magically be fixed and life to be better in every way because he came out, and when faced with the reality that the fight for life and rights is always ongoing, and a seemingly never-ending battle, he turns back to the establishment, to the machines, to take him back, to plug him back in to live their way, because living in truth and in reality is just far too much for him to bear. That there isn't an easy life for him in reality, he cannot stand it at all. And that is something that we see within the community. That rather than supporting each other when we come out, there are those that make life miserable when you do come out. And people go back into the closet. They turn away from the community and away from themselves, and it hurts. It hurts the person going back into hiding, and it hurts the community as a whole. Because we each bring something to the table that without we're lacking. And it's that self-loathing and that external loathing that really does damage. The agents, as described during the woman in the red dress training simulation, is to my mind the description of a false ally and the community members that are self-loathing and side with the right-wing agenda to outright oppress people in the name of tradition, protecting life, and the, quote, save our children propaganda. And we all know one or two people like this that we can name off the top of our heads. Either we know them personally or their personas upheld. These are people who are held up as, quote, model minorities, and they uphold systems of oppression for breadcrumbs. Bits of breadcrumbs. And in this context, Cypher's willing to accept those bits for comfort and protection in cutting a deal with the agents. To give them Morpheus. To give them a leader in the fight. As an aside, because the woman in the red dress is a whole thing for Mouse. I really do think that Mouse, he's such an interesting character and absolutely did not deserve to go out like that. I mean, he should have been one of the final survivors. Just saying. Now, back on track. The Oracle to me, when watching through this lens of queer reading, is an older member of the community that helps those in need, who guides the newly out and those looking for a place to explore who they are. She's seen it all and is not shocked by the kids and the, quote, baby gays who may try to shock and be edgy and shocking and daring. She just simply accepts them and helps them along their path. This will, of course, bring the discussion to the fights that happen in the movie. Now, I think that they might be indicative of the police brutality, the protests, riots, debates, and the general movement for equality that queer people face all over the world, fighting for our lives in some places and instances. Parts of the movement that those who uphold the systems of oppression will use as blatant opportunities to do harm to the community in acts of betrayal by undermining the movement, outing people, stirring the pot with claims of doing what's best for the community because it's a sickness to be cured in their minds. Whether it be coming from a queer member of the community or an ally who has endeared themselves to the community, either personally, locally, or even statewide and nationally. Another aside here, I have to give the cast a major round of applause for holding it together while Cypher does his thing in the real world. When he just unplugs APOC and Switch, I think that there's a level of composure that you have to have for him to be running around and hopping up on people and getting all like millimeters from their faces. It really is something that I'd love to see the outtakes for. It is really something that I'd love to see the outtakes for and the bloopers from that scene alone. I think that those would be just chef's kiss, just mwah, beautiful. Because I would be the one to, he hops up there and just right in the middle of a serious moment, just flash my eyes open and jump, boo. Just, I would do it. I would do it. I'm terrible. But of course, professionalism is professionalism, and I'd only do that once or twice. Leave him hanging for, is he gonna do it a third time? And that suspense. Yep, that would just only add to the scene. Anyway, during this process, I think that it becomes clear that there is a generational parallel between all of the characters. Neo being the newest out of the Matrix might just correlate to the new generation of queer people that gave new life to the movement for equal rights in the nation. Like, the millennials and Gen Z really just throwing ourselves into the movement as it was a back and forth growing up and just getting to that point of being no and getting out and being able to be out and be part of the community. And the community fired us up and we fired the community up again and again and again, and it just became cyclical. And I think that is what really gave the drive. And we're gonna get further into this reading with the other two movies, because I can already tell that there's gonna be some more paralleling that can be read through this lens. So while Cypher is doing his thing, there's the torture scene between Smith and Morpheus. And I think that's reflective of the inhumane conversion therapy camps that are still operational in this country. Because it's there that you would hear something like Smith's "humanity is a plague" speech, but in a manner that's more aligned with being gay or being trans. The LGBT people are the plague upon humanity. You know, that fear tactic used to keep people in line with the establishment, derived out of church doctrine that many of us heard growing up. Doctrine that is still preached in many places and to many within the community to this day. A practice that's not dying out as we would hope, and is becoming more violent and aggressive where it is used in the world. Okay, so now this last 40 minutes of the movie is where I think things get a little more complicated, representing possibly all the various fights that have taken place, most likely the Stonewall riots and the Compton cafeteria riots, thus making this line up more with the early days of the gay liberation movement, as it was called then. But I'll need to see the other two films through this lens before I dedicate to that line of thinking first. You know, I keep saying it that there's probably parallels, but I gotta see the other two films, and then, like, at the end of the third movie, I'll go through and really break down parallels. Though, like, I do think that there are some points and that there is something to it. Having seen these movies so many times over and over, but like I said, I wanna go movie by movie and then do, like, an addendum at the end of the third episode for this, at the end of the third movie, and just go, is that really there? So I'm working on that addendum right now. And it's when Agent Smith is supposedly honest with Morpheus that I think it might reflect that he's actually a zealot for the cause, that he hates society but hates the queer community more, so he remains participating in society to eradicate those he hates most. Probably because he's actually a member of the community who's self-loathing, much like one of the many anti-gay right-wing politicians who's found out to actually be gay themselves. Someone who then has to fight both sides from that point on, lining up with the fight going on in the lobby. I think that this is the parallel to the early fights against police brutality that took place and led to the riots. It's something reflective in all civil rights fights, if I'm going to be completely honest here. Take into account the massive destruction of property in the climax, that human life is more important than property, more important than material belongings, something that the establishment tells us is not true. They try to tell us that the two are equal, and at times death of people are needed for the progress of their properties, that we must be willing to sacrifice ourselves for the sake of the company and the machine that is our society, especially if we don't fit perfectly into their mold of what a good, upstanding person should be. Neo here is willing to sacrifice himself for another person and not a thing or place when rescuing Morpheus and Trinity. A willingness that only makes the machines, the establishment, the agents, more upset. Something that we here in the States see time and time again when making a stand for civil rights. We must also remember intersectionality is our strength and not a weakness. Neo faces down the agent after believing for so long that he cannot stand up to the powers that be, that he can't do anything, that he can't bring change. And it's here, after rescuing Morpheus with the help of Trinity and bailing her out of her little going down with the chopper situation and getting them back into the real world, it's then that he begins to see his own worth and value in the fight against oppression, taking on Agent Smith alone, because the running has to end somewhere. This shows the dedication and resolve we need to have when facing down the oppressors in our world. Neo telling Agent Smith his name is the moment where he takes pride in who he is and commits to not backing down. That he will see this through to the end. But of course, after eliminating one threat, it just crops back up in someone else, that being the conductor. Neo taking off, with another reference to Oz calling Tank Mr. Wizard, only sets to reinforce that there is a queer reading in this film. By linking the two pieces of media repeatedly, it's inevitably going to be read queerly. Tank, Trinity, and Morpheus helping Neo find his way out shows that even when we think we are alone, we really aren't. But there are just some things we have to do on our own. But we have the support of our community and those around us. We are all facing our own battles, and all of us have things to face and overcome. Neo falters and falls, as we all know. But that happens. When you fall, you get back up. So when Neo revives, he accepts love. Love of himself, love from others. It is beyond the slings and arrows of those who hate. This means that Smith and the other agents simply cannot win, because there is no longer any way that they can hold him back from following and owning his own life and following his own path. That they cannot stop him from living in the truth at all any longer. Trinity's profession of love is a moment that Neo realizes he has not only something to die for, but something to live for. A life worth living. All of us know the final monologue, and that this is a battle cry against the systems of oppression that bind us and seek to control us, to keep us locked in the little boxes and make us easy to control. The thing that the system fears most is loss of control, and we're free of it now. So, having moved through the entirety of the first film and breaking down through a queer lens, I think that this does read as a definitively queer film, not only because of the trans creators behind the film, but the messages, references, and the media itself. There is something to be said about the crew of the ship representing different aspects of the community, like I said earlier, but that's not a debate I'm willing to get into yet, because looking at that, there is a debate, and I'm not sure I'm ready to throw my hat into the ring on that one just yet, but I'm sure I could do it at a later date. So just be sure to subscribe to the Remnants of Reese's Remember All for future content. Follow all the socials linked in the description, or go through my link tree also in the description. Give 5-star ratings, and I'll see you next week wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll be talking about The Matrix Reloaded. Is it queer too? Electric Boogaloo? Maybe. I don't know, that seems like a bit of a long title, but yeah, we're going to be going over that. So, I will see you back here next week. I know that this was probably a little bit shorter of an episode, but hey, I didn't want to go, like, digging too deep. I just wanted to stick surface level, and then we'll probably do a follow-up. An addendum follow-up episode, where I dive a little bit deeper into certain aspects of these films. So, until next week, have a cookie and feel right as rain.